like to thank the organizers for inviting me to participate in this symposium. I'm not actually going to talk entirely about the work that's been done in my lab. Maybe mostly I'm going to talk about the work that's been done throughout the field. And I'll try to give the appropriate credit as I talk about this work. But I really feel that that we are at a point in this study of platinovirus genomics that we're beginning to be able to answer questions we've been, or at least address questions that we've been ignoring for quite a long time. And what I'd like to remind you of in terms of the life cycle of this particular entity is that our thinking from the time this entity was named as a poly-DNA virus, that the origin of this entity that's associated with parasitic wasp and has all of these functional effects that Mike so well described earlier, is something like a conventional insect virus. That means it would be encapsulated within the virion. It would have a large, probably double-stranded DNA genome. But then you think about what we are actually looking at and studying, as we're studying in the wasp, a linear provirus that's integrated within the genome in a way that we don't fully understand. And then we're studying this episomal virus that replicates only in the female reproductive tract, is introduced during parasitization into this caterpillar, where many small circular DNA segments are introduced into Lepidopteran cells, and they express these pathogenic genes, but the virus does not replicate. And obviously, these two activities, these two roles of the virus being a conventional pathogenic virus and becoming something that is mutualistic in a very highly evolved pathway, we don't really understand how you get from A to B, but we've just sort of assumed that that's what's happened. And so what I'd like to do is sort of outline the talk, and I'm going to spend most of our talk talking about the episomal form of the virus, and I'll say encapsulated or episomal. That's what we actually see inside the virion that's packaged for delivery to the Lepidopteran insect during parasitization. There's some very nice work coming out now, that's almost none of it's from my lab, about the proviral form of the platinovirus. This is predominantly in one of the three subgroups of platinoviruses. And so I'll talk about sort of the proviral genomes. We're just beginning to also look in a systematic way at the composition of the virion proteins in the virus. Again, up to this point, that's largely been ignored, and it's providing some very important insights for the entire field. And then lastly, I would like to just talk about a phenomena that we have observed, as a field we have observed, in which individual platinovirus segments integrate into insect cells after infection. And it's been the significance of this has been unknown. What I would like to suggest is that this is a very common phenomena, and maybe we need to think about it in a different way. So let me remind you of the overall phylogeny of the entities that we call poly-DNA viruses. This is a illustration of the Ichneumonidia, and there's one group of platinoviruses that Mike talked about, the so-called bracoviruses, that very clearly have a single evolutionary lineage that dates back to approximately 70 million years ago, when presumably there was a virus-wasp association that then led to the generation of all of the platinovirus and the bracovirus clades, some 40,000 species or so. In the ichnovirus, there have been two groups of wasps that are clearly associated with platinoviruses, the so-called ichnomonads and the what we're calling the bankine platinoviruses. These had both been, up until recently, grouped together as a single ichnovirus clade. And again, there are tens of thousands of species that are associated with the ichnovirus or bankine virus clades. What I would like to point out is that these evolutionary lineages are separate, suggesting that the origin of platinoviruses is tripartite. It happened at least three times. And yet we still have, as a result of these evolutionary symbiosis, genomes that look very similar in many ways. And so how did we get there? You've seen this slide previously. This is an illustration of the bracovirus as representative of the bracovirus encapsidated or episomal virus genomes. The width of the segment represents hypermolarity, so there are more individual segments of segment O than there are, for example, of segment B. The colors represent individual gene families, and you see there's an association with particular segments for a particular type of gene family. And we have, again, four or five families that are present in multiple copies, and a number of solitary genes that we have not characterized at this point. This is a sort of a summary of the ichnovirus genomes that have been characterized. We've sequenced the Campylia sonarensis genome, Hypisodor fugitivus genome, Tranosema rostrale virus genome, and the Glypta fumiferana genome. This is the Bankine virus. And just simply visual inspection of these gels shows that the platelet segments are quite variable. The aggregate genome size is approximately the same, but you can have anywhere from 20 segments to well over 100 segments. This shows the Campylia sonarensis genome, and compare this back to the bracovirus genome. You have hypermolar segments, Z, W, and V, for example. You have association of individual segments with gene families, so segment G2 has primarily rep genes. So overall, these gene families look quite similar, even though there's no evolutionary ancestor to both of these viruses. Here are two additional ichnovirus genomes, primarily just to illustrate the variability in the number of segments. So we have about 65 segments in Hypisodor fugitivus, a Campylopleugine ichnovirus, whereas the Campylia sonarensis virus has on the order of 24 segments. The Tranosema rostrale virus is sort of an interesting example, in that this insect has never been carried in culture, and the viral genome has been sequenced from wild-caught insects. So with current technology, it's conceivable to do a much more in-depth analysis of platelet genomes than we have done to this point. So we could look at a lot of different species. If you then compare the genome distribution of the various ichnoviruses, what I'd like to point out is it's quite variable. So, for example, the cysteine motif gene family has 10 copies of this particular gene in the Campylia sonarensis virus, but the Tranosema rostrale virus has a single copy. So, even though these genes are represented within the same virus, there's clearly a lot of variability and change that occurs within an individual gene family. I'd also like to point out that approximately 50% of the genes are solitary genes that have no assigned origin at this point. By then comparing some of these solitary genes in Campylidis to other ichnovirus genes, we've been able to identify gene families that were not evident from this simple analysis of Campylidis. So these would be solitary genes in Campylidis, but for example, the J4 gene is present in 6 copies in Hypisodor fugitivus. This work is really going to be presented much more depth by Tanja Fisher on Monday in a presentation, if anybody would care to look at these comparative genomes a little more. The Bankine virus, again, has 104 segments that we have characterized. There's a tendency for each segment to have a single open reading frame. Some segments have no detectable open reading frames. The genes families are present. The only one that's found in all of the platelet viruses are the so-called anchoring genes. And we believe that these anchoring genes were selected by each of the platelet virus groups from the host genome. There's very little evidence in characterizing any of the platelet virus genomes of ancestral viral sequences from the encapsidated genomes. So what is put into the virus is not related to extant viruses by and large. The genes that we do find encapsidated in the virus have the closest homologs that would be cellular genes. Anchorins would be a good example. again, some summary, the segment number is very variable. There is repetitive sequence. It's mostly on these abundant segments where you have large regions of the segment duplicated. Virion proteins, things that are required to make the virus, are not present by and large. 75 to 80% of the genome's non-coding. That's very unusual for a virus. We see a number of splice genes. Many of the open reading frames, we have no correlate to database genes, and this segment gene family associations are variable between the different blinding virus species. So let's think a little bit about the proviral genomes. So from the time that these blinding viruses were first described as having essential functional significance, it was recognized that the transmission must be very efficient, and it was hypothesized that they may be transmitted as proviruses. That was demonstrated in the late 70s, early 80s through southern blotting, and primarily through the work of Max Summers' lab, selected individual proviral segments were shown to be physically integrated by sequencing across the integration junctions in the ichnoviruses. More recently, maybe about 5 years ago, chromosome hybridizations were done whereby different pieces of the platelet, different platelet segments, were localized to the same segment in bracoviruses. That's done by Jean-Michel Drazin's lab. And more recently, there's been some very nice large-scale mapping and sequencing of the provirus genome by the lab of Nene Vishwanath and Don Gunderson-Rendell. Chris Desjardins is the senior author on that. So what was described for the ichnoviruses were individual segments. So this is viral DNA that's flanked by DNA that was not encapsidated. And there was no evidence in the immediately adjacent region of other platelet segments. And so the picture that emerged from analysis of a very limited number of segments was that of a solitary platelet segment dropped down in the midst of a sea of WASP DNA, but retains the ability to excise during virus replication and be packaged. By contrast, in the bracovirus lineages, that early analysis documented sequences that were present in tandem arrays. So there'd be multiple platelet sequences lined up next to each other. And actually, this is what you would predict for integration of a provirus into a genome, that you would have ancestrally virus genes lined up next to each other within the chromosome. And in the with the case of the Glypta indiensis bracovirus, they identified, Desjardins et al. Identified seven different chromosomal loci on this individual segment that were, that contained platelet segments. This chromosomal locus one had seven bracovirus segments aligned in tandem arrays. And that's illustrated in this slide, in which the 1P, 2P, 3P, etc., represents a individual platelet segment. And you can see that they're clustered, separated by very short intersegmental repeats, which allow the individual segments to be excised. The entire region is flanked by long terminal repeats, which is perhaps suggestive of a transposable element. And these regions with the red arrows lie outside of this chromosomal locus. Now, they looked at these regions by analyzing the dinucleotide repeats within the different regions, and what they found was that all of the platelet segments that lay within the long terminal repeats had a different dinucleotide repeat frequency than the immediate flanking sequences. So if I can back up, all of the repeats on the interior were similar and different from those sequences in positions 1 and 4 that were on the outside of those repeats. And so that's suggestive of a viral chunk of DNA being inserted from a different evolutionary origin into a WASP chromosomal locus. Okay, so the third piece I would like to talk about is the limited analysis that's been done on platelet structural proteins. When they were described, the platelet virus were initially described, the complexity of the genome of the platelet virus coat proteins was determined by SDS page, a very rudimentary analysis. There's a little bit of cloning of encoded genes, which suggested that protein encoding genes could be present either in the wasp genome or encoded by the platelet virus itself. But more recent analysis of the proteome has been done by Jean-Michel Drezin and Volkoff and Beatrice Landrin's lab. And what they have been able to determine is that these BRCA virus structural protein genes that are largely encoded by the wasp genome, and I'm talking about 18 of approximately 25 structural proteins, and that 18 or so of these structural protein genes are clearly related to baculoviruses in the nudivirus subgroup. And so this allows a clear genetic relationship to be drawn between extant viruses in the baculovirus group and the platelet viruses in the BRCA virus group, which again associated with WASP approximately 70 million years ago. They've also done some limited analysis of the ichnovirus virion protein encoding genes, and the story is not as clear on the other in that particular group. So to reiterate, the encapsulated BRCA virus genomes are organizationally similar to ichnoviruses, but evolutionarily unrelated. The proviral BRCA virus genomes are clustered and distinct from wasp genomes. The genes encoding BRCA virus structural proteins document an evolutionary relationship to free-living baculoviruses. So I'd like to close with this, a consideration of the structure. And so if we accept that these viruses were at one time a free-living virus with a single chromosome, they must have integrated into a wasp chromosome and then undergone significant restructuring to become the platelet viruses that we now characterize. I have speculated at various times that part of this reorganization can be understood by referencing process of reductive evolution. And this is something that occurs when bacteria establish obligate symbiotic relationships with host organisms, and all those non-essential genes in that symbiosis tend to be lost. And this has a marked effect on the overall genome structure and evolution of the bacteria. And by analogy, the same thing could be used to explain the loss of platelet virus structural proteins from the encapsulated viral genome to the symbiotic host, to the wasp genome. So that accounts for losing everything that's virus. But we still have the matter of identifying or isolating those functional genes from the wasp. How is it that our provirus acquires ankyrins and PTPs from the wasp genome? And how do they go about restructuring, duplicating those genes, creating multiple segments that encode different promoters? And so that we end up with this virus that's highly specialized. And so these areas where the question mark lie are kind of the areas that I'm beginning to think about, and I would suggest that that's where the field is right now. And this is a piece of data that has just, I've considered it confusing for a very long time. And what we have observed is that when you simply take platelet virus from ichnoviruses or bracoviruses and infect cultured cells and then passage those cells, what you find is that some platelet virus segments are able to integrate into those cultured cells. And initially these studies were done with Southern blotting, and so they would typically identify one segment as integration competent. So for example, segment D integrates, and so it has this property of being able to infect a cell and introduce the DNA into that cell. And this was done by a number of labs. But about 4 years ago, Natalie Volkoff made the point to me repeatedly that this was not just one segment, and that it occurs not just in cell culture, but it also occurs in parasitized or virus-injected insects. So it occurs in vivo. And is that relevant? So I had a graduate student, Julianne Diakoudis, and she's giving a poster presentation tomorrow. And she challenged my interpretation. And she challenged it by doing a really systematic analysis and inspection of insect cells, so dose ranges and replicates, you know, very thorough experimentation. And then rather than looking at a single segment, she looked at the entire platinovirus genome by PCR. And to really minimize a great deal of work, the take home from this is a very high percentage, about 75% of the platinovirus segments were able to integrate in this situation. And I would argue that this level of integration is not an artifact, it's not a byproduct. There is something significant going on. And I would suggest that perhaps it relates to the evolution of segmentation in these viruses. So to conclude, we have done a lot of genome sequencing of primarily the provirus. We found that similarities exist in independent lineages. I would argue that these similarities are driven by the association, by the symbiosis. The conserved features probably reflect the alternate pathogenic and symbiotic existence that they have, and that platinovirus is likely to reflect a loss between, or a balance between gene loss and gene acquisition. But it's now possible to think about and begin to experiment on the process of segmentation that has led to the entities that we know as platinoviruses. And let me acknowledge the USDA NRI for funding my work over a number of years, the people in my lab, many former members and collaborators and colleagues. So thank you.